Hi, my name is Sydney, and Maya?
Yeah?
Are you excited for the new season of Shadow and Bone?
I forgot that it was happening completely. If I'm being honest, I don't even remember what happened in season one, nor any of the characters' names. So, yes?
Okay.
Question mark? I will have to reconsume that content.
Yeah. Well, thankfully it's not too long, but...
The end of this month?
March 16th.
Oh, shit.
Middle of the month.
That's when I go back to school.
Ah. Whoops. Whoops. Hmm. And that's Maya, and welcome to Canonically Incorrect. And this is a special Shadow of Bone episode to...
Not promote. We're not promoting anything,
but to celebrate the new season of Shadow and Bone. Because sometimes that just doesn't happen with Netflix. You know what I mean?
I mean, it does, and then they end up canceling the show after three seasons, so you're just like, oh.
I'm not gonna hope that we can finish it out. You know, there's three books, three seasons.
You know, we can only hope.
Yeah.
But Netflix is seemingly running themselves into the ground.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah,
we'll see.
I'm crossing my fingers, because it's one of the only reasons I'm still with the streaming service, because I do remember a lot of Shadow and Bone, and I was not one of the girlies who read it when it was books. They just weren't. I don't know why. I read a lot of like those types of books when they were coming out, but Shadow and Bone just never.
See, I'm more interested in reading the prequel, quote unquote, series.
Six of Crows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I like that set of characters. From what I remember, I'm speaking from when I first watched the show and like did some digging.
Right.
I know about the books. I was interested in sort of reading the books, and then I found out that, like, Jasper and, like, that trio had their own
book. Yeah, like, Kazbrekker and
Inej. And I was like, whoa.
Jenya,
They're my favorite characters in this show. And I think most people are also like
that. I was going to say, a lot of people, from what I know, from hearing in the ether, is that people like the Six of Crow duology better than the Grisha Chronicles. And it makes sense, like, it came out afterwards, she just strengthened her writing skills.
Right.
Which...
So, that's why I'm more interested in reading that than the actual...
With Alina and the Darkling and Val and everything.
But, like, if they're making the Grisha series into...
Well, apparently, because I remember from our conversation with Chell, who was our last interview of 2021... She was very excited for us to meet, like, a specific character that was coming in the second season, because she's like, he's gonna, like, rough up, make some fucking drama. And I was like...
Spicy,
and I'm ready to see it. So, and that's specifically with, like, the Alina and the Darkling kind of side of it.
I do remember that being mentioned.
Yeah, so I'm excited on that front. But before I get into it, because, unfortunately, the episode's gonna be a little long... I tried my fucking best to shorten my notes. Maya has, like, she's seen war in her eyes. it won't be horribly long. It's not Passeren. It's never, nothing is ever going to be the length of Passeren.
Okay.
But it is 2 pages longer than what I normally cap myself off for notes. So I'm going to start as quickly as possible. But before I do so, I want to do a new kind of thing, because we always forget to promote ourselves in any way, shape, or form. So I just want to have, like, a monthly roundup for our Patreon, because we always forget to bring up our Patreon. For our Patreon last month in February, we released 3 new episodes. Maya talked about the new experimental horror movie Skinamarink. I'm so glad that you actually watched that movie on my recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah. Her thoughts behind it and...
Yeah, I kind of went into some production stuff.
Yeah.
I talked about that a little bit. I talked about my own feelings, but it's definitely more of like... I'm more invested in the production and the post-production of things. So when I talk about films, because I have talked about a couple other films on the Patreon in past episodes, specifically my solo episodes, I tend to like to talk about... I never go into super heavy specifics about post-production, because I know a lot of people don't care, just like me. Like, I don't care what ISOs they're at, or like what the aperture of the camera. Like, I don't give a shit. I don't do that personally. I don't deal with that. So like, I try and give, like, a general, like, hey, if you want to learn more about post-production, I'm going to talk about it in a very general sense so that you don't get overwhelmed. And my personal episodes are never that long.
No.
They usually range from about 20 minutes to about 50.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then my solo episode, I talked about one of my favorite rare pair ships, which is Ushioi, which is Oikawa Toru and...
The Betrayal.
I'm so sorry! I don't know if you actually listened to the episode, but there's a part where I was like, I know my Elijah cut is so much. I'm so sorry.
I literally.
But it was like the day before Valentine's Day that that episode came out. So I was like, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite rare pairs, which like there's not a ton of fan fiction about them. And so I read the fan fiction, The Insignificant Pride and Prejudice, which I loved every second of it. Nice. And yeah, if you guys haven't, if you are not subscribed to the Patreon and like haven't known, when I've been doing episodes with just myself, I've just been kind of doing a little story time. So there's no dialogue in between the summary of the fan fiction. So it's just like a little story, kind of like a little pod fic, but in the same way we do it, where it's just a book summary. It's not just the full fic. And they seem to have a great time over there. So, and then our joint episode this month was a top five childhood crushes. So Maya indulged me, and we talked about characters from media we had crushes on as children.
Correct.
Yes. And it was, I learned a lot about you, and you learned a lot about me.
Did you learn a lot about me? I felt like most of it was relatively known. I feel like I learned more about you than you
learned
about me.
No, I did, actually, yeah.
In that scenario, specifically.
But if these are interesting to you, I think we have such time promoting ourselves. So I think a little monthly roundup at the beginning of the month would be a good idea. So the last three episodes that we did on our Patreon, if you would like to subscribe to our Patreon and listen to those episodes, it's just $5 a month for the baseline bonus episodes. It's patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect, and join us over there. It's a really good time. There's a lot of bonus content.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about Shadow and Bone, just as a whole?
Again, I don't really remember it, so it's hard to, like, give a proper opinion, I feel. I know that my feelings after watching the first season were like, hey, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that there is still potential for Netflix to fuck it up.
Sure.
As they often do.
Sure.
I know people really like the book series, which gives me hope that
they
will be followed and or that they will be enhanced in some way by the, you know, visual retelling of this. So I remember liking the concept. I can't really remember exactly what it is. Like, I know some people
I should explain just a little, because it's a canon divergence.
Right.
So there's Alina Starkov, who is kind of in this world. There are normal people, which I can't remember the term for right now, and then Grisha, which are people with powers.
Right.
And so Alina, in the beginning of the series, is a normal person, and then she finds that she is a sun summoner, which, like, no one in history has ever seen before. So then she gets taken in by the Grisha to train her powers, and there she meets, like, the Darkling, and then her friend Mal, who she has, like, complicated emotions with. It's kind of just, like, a pulling back and forth kind of a love triangle, but at the time, love triangles were all the hype in YA novels.
Right.
And then in the series Shadow and Bone, in the first season, towards the end, she learns that, like, the Darkling has been manipulating her to find this stag to give him more power, and then he ends up, like, collaring her, and, like, he just ends up manipulating her and everything after, like, sharing her with all these feelings. So then it's a hard decision of, like, did those feelings mean anything?
Right.
Did they not? Like, so that's kind of where the first season ended. And then they ended up getting away, both Mal and Alina. So they were getting away from the Darkling. So that's kind of where we pick up in this, and that's why I wanted to give you just a little.
Okay, yeah. Because, I remember that, like, it was, like, one group of people, another group of people.
Yeah, so the show,
she was special in some way, but I was like, I couldn't remember why.
Yeah, so, and then, like, the Darkling, he, like, controls shadows, and then Alina controls the sun, so they're, like, literally the opposite.
Right.
But, like, in the show specifically, they took, like, both the trilogy and the duology and made them one thing with, like, the series, the original series, the Grisha series, doesn't have the Six of Crows people in it, and the Sidus. So they merged them together to make one story, which the Six of Crow people, they don't really come up. Jenya comes up, but just as a name. So that's, like, Jasper and Jenya and Kaz Brekker and Inej. So those people don't really come up in this fic, but those are, like, the Six of Crow people.
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, so yeah, I'm going to get into my episode today. So to celebrate the newest season of Shadow and Bone on Netflix on March 16th, I have pulled a fic from one of our beloved guests who I've already mentioned today, Destiny's, aka Chell. She was a fabulous guest to have on, and I knew that in the back of my mind I wanted to talk about this fic, which is the number one Shadow and Bones and the number one Dark Lena fic on AO3, which I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to fucking talk about it.
Right.
When the time comes. And so the time has come. So thank you so much, Chel. I have not notified you. I thought this would just be really fun for you to just wake up one day and have it tagged on Twitter. It's called Out of Time. And written by Destinies, also known as our friend Chell. It was started in September 1st, 2020, and it was finished October 30th of 2020. Nice. It is 25 chapters, a little over 100,000 words. So this was definitely written before the show, as we knew that she was a fan of Shadow and Bones before the show came out. And her fic kind of introduced a lot of the new fans who came from the show to the fan fiction of Shadow and Bone. It is a mature rating. There are some tactful sex scenes that I have avoided because that's what we do. Go read the fic if you want those spicy scenes, you know. It is of the Grisha trilogy, so Libra Dugo, Shadow and Bone, and the relationships are the Darkling / Alina Starkov, and then past Mal Orstev and Alina Starkov. It has 88,509 hits, 3,594 kudos, 1,637 comments, and 808 bookmarks, and some of the tags are alternate universe, canon divergent, amnesia, forced marriage, past character death, grief / mourning, suicidal thoughts, Cold War elements. Alina Starkov is still a sun summoner, and the difficulties of being married to a villain when you have a shred of morality. And the fic is written in a first-person POV, but I will be retelling it in a third-person POV instead. Okay. To start the fic, Alina wakes up on a ship with her childhood friend, Mal, and they are sailing across the true sea to a new life in Novi Zem. I will also say, I'm going to butcher these names because holy shit.
That's okay.
A life where we could be whoever we want. Except ourselves, Alina thinks. A life where we would be free of him. She has just left the Darkling behind, but he still haunts her dreams. His hand is still warm on her face. In her dreams, she leans into him. Until she reminds herself that this isn't real. And then at the end of every dream, he sighs and just says, again.
Okay.
And every time, Alina wakes up next to Mal, who is always there, and he calms her from her dreams. But the next time she wakes up, it's to the Darkling's voice. She's no longer on the ship, and the Darkling is to her left. And she has a shackle on her wrist. She begins demanding answers from the Darkling. Where is Mal? When did I get here? How long? And the Darkling says, you've always been here. She says, where is here? And he says, you're in Olsalta. And Alina's heart just drops, because that's where she was getting away from. She and Mal had fled their home. How is she here? How long has she been here? And the Darkling tells her, 2 months. So yeah. Alina starts rightfully panicking, screaming at the Darkling before she can do anything. She's gone again. So she's fallen into her unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. And when she wakes up again, it's on the ship with Mal.
Okay.
You're not there, she tells him. You're not there. I can't find you. Hey, Mal says. It doesn't matter. I'll always find you. But you have to wake up. They need you. Who does? Everyone. The next time she wakes up, the Darkling has been replaced by a lone Kobolnik. She wants to leave her bed, but he hesitates, eventually agreeing. And the minute they're out of the room, she blinds him with her light. She staggers to the door into the long hallway, and she remembers how to run, getting sense of her muscles again. Nobody stops her at first, but then an alarm bell rings. She pushes through heavy double doors, straight outside. And the first thing she sees is dark shapes in the sky, and her heart drops when she realizes what they are. Ships. The dark shapes are ships bearing the Darkling's symbol. He has won everything. And then a curtain of shadow is cast over Alina until she's just in darkness again. And again, the Darkling is by her side when she wakes up. After seeing the ships, she really has nowhere to run. Escape is pretty futile. This land is completely his. The Darkling wraps his hand around the strange shackle and asks, "What is the last thing you remember?" Alina turns her head away, and he sighs. You are not a prisoner here, Alina. Then what am I? You're my wife.
Okay.
I gotta, listen. I was not a bitch into Shadow and Bone, but, like, The Darkling, though.
Whoa.
It's a really complicated emotions that, like, I'll go into more when the fic goes throughout.
Okay.
But, like, honest to God, this is some of the best, like, villain fuckery, like, the Darkling is. At least the way that, and again, I've never read the books, but the way that, like, Chell writes him is so, like, hey, babe, if you don't want him, I'll take him. You know? Like, hey.
Whoa.
Hey. Like, I'll put Girly. The murder aside, you Whoa. Know? There's something about him that's just like, hey. That suddenly I understand all the villainous people.
You gotta reel that in.
Hey. Anyways, Alina, after hearing that she is his wife, laughs and laughs and laughs. Because how fucking absurd. He couldn't come up with, like, anything better. But then the Darkling produces a simple golden band, and it looks the right size to fit her finger, but still, that could be anyone's ring. Mm. It's then that Alina notices that he's wearing a matching one.
Interesting.
We were married 99 years ago in the chapel on the palace grounds. 99 years ago. It had only just been rebuilt after you brought it down on my head. Do you remember that? Even if the rest were true, I would never marry you. And yet you did. Because you wanted the Civil War to end as much as I did, and we were figureheads on opposing sides. It was part of the terms of your surrender, in exchange for the lives of your friends, among other things. So she is his wife, and his prisoner, no matter what he says. She is bathed and given proper meals, but she's not allowed to leave nor see Mal. She's asking, like, where are my friends? Where is Mal? I would like to see these people.
Right.
And she says, I was told that he's resting. And the Darkling says, you kept upsetting yourself, Alina. I had to placate you somehow. So he's gone? Yes. Your friend died on the battlefield, but I had no hand in it. He was already dead when I reached you. I did not kill him. What does it matter? If you didn't, then one of your soldiers did. No, Alina, you told me yourself that his blood is on your hands.
Gaslight gatekeep girl boss? I mean, that's the vibe that I'm getting now, having no information.
No, it's yeah.
Okay.
And Alina's the same thing. She's like, he must be lying, because she loved Mal.
Right.
Like, as far as I read, because I tried to do, when I finished this fic, I, like, looked into the books where I was like, please tell me this is how it ends, because I was like, holy shit, Whoa. Please. And then it's like, no, that was just, like, her first love, like, her easiest love. Like,
oh.
It's just, like, she cannot believe that she would ever do that to him, because she was like, I love Mal.
Mm-hmm.
She just saw him. She's like, to her, 99 years had not passed. It has been, like, yesterday to her that she just saw him.
Right.
So it's just, like, he has to be lying, because, like, it can't be real, because even if half of the things that he said were real, then she was also a monster and also a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, she dreams of Mal's death. The day passes in a blur, and when the Darkling visits her that night, he explains why she's here, and not the Alina who remembers everything, the one who married him.
Mm-hmm.
He tells her that she was taken by the Shu, a sort of extremist group, in an attempt to unseat the Darkling. They kidnapped Alina. The plan was to clean Alina out entirely and reprogram her, so she was in a coma for 2 months because the Darkling and his men tried everything to get Alina back to who she was before.
Okay.
Alina loses count of the days after this, but on one particular day, she gets a new visitor. She's a tailor, just like Jenya, but her name is Natalia. She tells Alina that she's been her tailor for 3 years. She dresses and readies Alina before taking her out to the gardens, something she informs Alina that she loved doing before.
Mm-hmm.
In the gardens, there are 2 rows of apple trees in front of this shallow stone pool, and Alina asks, who planted these? I believe you did. But it was a long time ago. Me, Sovrina, okay. If I may, you are different. Good or bad? Alina asks. Good. Okay. Escape is no longer on her mind in the Darkling's country. Alina wouldn't make it far without allies and resources, but she could learn a little more about it all. So she waits until night to slip away. She hides when she hears boots, but it's not the Darkling, thankfully. It's this palace steward. She catches him talking to another man, something about a prisoner charged with attempted murder, political pamphleteering, and resisting arrest, and he's being kept in the basement. Okay. So they keep walking, and as soon as Alina gets ready to leave, the Darkling catches her, but she's steadfast. It's my home. I have the right to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Darkling considers this, but he would rather have Natalia give her a tour than just Alina walk alone in the middle of the night.
I mean, sort of fair. I can maybe give him that one.
Right. Then Alina notices that he's not actually there, but he's an illusion.
Mm.
And he says, you wanted company, but you didn't want me. Not physically. This seemed like a compromise. She says, I want to see Mal, but you wouldn't give him to me, even if you had him. I wouldn't. As you may have gathered, I dislike sharing you.
Mm. Okay.
The next morning, Natalia is there for Alina to pretty her up again. She lets her know that the Darkling just left for the Shuhan front during their walk.
Mm.
Alina sees those ships in the sky again, and she asks Natalia about them and learns that they're to protect the capital bombs from the Ferdinand airships and the Shuhan flyers. And if you don't remember the Ferdinand, that was, like, where that guy that Jenya rescued in the show, where, like, he hated her for being Grisha or something. Remember that, like, that blonde, tall guy? That's the most compelling relationship in the show right now.
Okay.
It's like, man, I can't wait to see where that goes.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, I understand.
Where she, like, rescued him and he, like, fucking hates
like
her.
Like, the Viking?
The Viking guy? Yeah. And Alina, noticing, after talking about these ships, she says, I'm surprised he cares about protecting the city at all. And Natalia says, actually, you developed the air defense plan from the Grisha generals. So all these pieces of information that she's taking from all of these other people
mm-hmm.
about who she was is really just, like, putting her off rocker. Like, every single time, it's just, like, a punch in the gut where she's like, I did what? Like, mm-hmm. she can't believe that she would ever do things like this.
Right.
So Alina appreciates Natalia when she falls silent, when she no longer wants to talk.
Right.
That night, Alina, she figures out how to go to the Darkling in her dreams, the same way he did with her.
Mm.
And he's in this meeting room, his attention solely on her. He brings over this map of the New World, and there's the Fold. All right, do you remember the Fold?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Fold, no one can enter it, but in the center, breaking the Fold, is a thin sliver of land labeled the Crossing. Which was Alina's wedding gift to Ravka. So now people can cross the Fold without almost dying, basically. Because, you know, there's shit in there, like the scene in the first season where, like, the Six of Crow gang are trying to get through.
Right.
And they have to be in this, like, mole tankard. Otherwise, they'll just fucking die.
Right.
So her gift to Ravka was having this crossing for them to safely pass through.
Right.
So Alina asks what the Darkling is doing out here, and it's not a pretty answer. He's getting, I want to say revenge, but he says reprisal for what they did to Alina. And Alina says, don't do that, no, please, but the Darkling can only keep what happened to her a secret for so long, and when it comes out, their people will want blood.
Okay.
But Alina knows that they'll retaliate, and it'll be a full-out war.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, if I'm the wrong party, shouldn't I be able to decide the nature of my revenge? Just stop this and come back. Can you say that like you mean it? What? Tell me to come back. Say it like you want me there. Her eyes slide to the map. She thinks of the thousands of lives that would be lost. She had seen the Darkling do it before. However unwilling, she had helped him do it. Come home. His hand slips into her hair, cradling the back of her head. Again. It was easier to manage the second time. Please come home. And the second he returns, she is there. Did you do it? She demands. Do you hear that? Silence. No retaliating bombs falling near the city outskirts. Yes, I exercised the restraint you asked, Alina. I hope you're grateful.
Okay.
And he's so frustrating because why does she need to convince him not to kill thousands of innocent lives?
Right.
As she turns to leave, she says one last thing to him. I don't want you coming to visit me at night anymore. As a projection or otherwise, I don't want to see you again.
Slay.
Alina, with the help of Natalia, is able to get hold of a Ravkin history book. Beautifully and brilliantly, the book is written by Jenya's son. And she specifically wants books outside because she's like, if it's written by a Ravkin, it'll be like, look what great things they have done.
Right.
Kind of like how U.S. textbooks are. And as Alina reads, she finds descriptions of herself towards the end of the Ravkin Civil War. And it reads, the myth of Alina Starkov has outgrown this woman, as myths are wont to do. Many in Ravka continued to revere her as a saint, reborn on the Shadow Fold, a tragic beloved figure whose true sacrifice was installing herself as a permanent beacon to keep the darkness at bay. Perhaps Starkov is most remarkable for being the first contemporary saint, a person known, hated, and loved by those who still live and among us. Alina Starkov has been, and can yet be known, her journey to sainthood serves as a portrait of the modern idea of celebrity, as well as a time capsule of Ravka at an inflection point. According to the book, Alina had mastered the ability to make herself and other objects invisible. She thinks this would be a wonderful thing to use to sneak down into the cellar to figure out what the guards were talking about, the prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 3 days to figure out the skill enough to feel confident on taking the task at hand. She's able to get her invisibility up and drop it when she gets to the cellar. The lower Alina walks, the colder it gets. The steps are steep and there's no railing. The stench, it grows stronger. It's kind of like rotting flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And when Alina reaches the bottom, she calls out to whoever could be down there. There's no reply, but Alina thinks she sees a shadow. Then there are two black eyes staring at her. Alina doesn't dare move. And then a sound like a howl. And then a flash of dark fangs as it lunges for Alina from the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, there are steel bars in between Alina and this monster. But that doesn't stop it from biting and clawing at the cage. Alina throws her hands up and calls for a sphere of light while yelling at the figure to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
The monster shrinks back from the bars into a low crouch, and it's then that Alina sees that it has massive wings and it uses them to shield its eyes from the light. Alina snuffs out the light and moves closer to the bars, and it just looks at Alina, does not jump at her.
Mm-hmm.
And as Alina gets this closer look at the monster, she's reminded of a Zemini folktale. She says, in the first part of the story, the king and queen had two sons. The first was normal, but the second one was a monster with claws and horns. And of course, the royal family wanted nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the king had a maze built under the palace and put it down there. She spends many days after with the monster in the cellar. She feeds it, tells it stories, tells it many of the confusing thoughts and fears and dreams that she has. And it's when she is coming back from one of these nights with the monster that she hears a violin. Your favorite instrument ever.
What the fuck?
And she's surprised to find that it's the Darkling. The Darkling plays violin.
And you're into this?
It's not. Okay, we'll get into it, okay? His back is to her and he's in such deep concentration that he doesn't even notice that she's there until he slows. Alina, I thought you were in your room. My room isn't that far. You knew I'd hear. Maybe I did. Is hoping that you'd come this way, another of my many crimes. And maybe Alina should leave, but she finds herself staying, even telling the Darkling to keep playing. She's mesmerized by his playing, something in between sadness and yearning. She sits and listens, and soon she begins nodding off. Alina tries to stay awake, but she does fall asleep, only stirring awake when someone softly picks her up from the couch. But she does not fight back, only turning her head into his chest. Soon the Darkling sets her down on her bed and she hears him whisper, I'm glad you joined me this evening, Alina. It's always more rewarding to play for an audience. So the Darkling and Alina set out to Olsalta by train. And it's to get a little break and to show Alina more of the land during this overarching Cold War that the Darkling is constantly working on. So nothing's happening right this instant, especially since Alina avoided the war with the Shuhan. But the Darkling is determined on his mission to create a safe world for the Grisha. So I don't remember this point of the story that clearly, I'm so sorry, but I guess the Grisha weren't treated great before the Darkling.
As is usually the case with these things.
So the war continues, and he says, you asked me once if I would like to be the king of nothing. It was early in our marriage. I had announced my intent to enter the fold and strangle the Shuhan, and you asked me when I would be satisfied, when nothing remained but myself, you and the monsters of the dark. Was I right? That may satisfy me, but it would not satisfy you, and so the world remains. Either way, it's all on my shoulders. Something happens to me or I leave you. I am ancient. You cannot expect me to have changed my ways so quickly. No, I guess a century is too short for that. So, I don't know if you remember, but the Darkling in the show is like 400 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So say another 100 years have passed, he's like 500 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's an ancient man.
Quite old.
So if this is all on her shoulders, then she might as well know what the fuck is going on. So Alina grabs some dispatches and gets to work reading all about this war. And the Darkling wakes her up the next morning when they're about an hour from their destination. The sky is heavy and gray when she steps off the train outside Crispic. The Darkling leads her to another car, and when they make it to town, there are people everywhere to welcome them. There are cheers, but Alina does catch a murmuring, "The trapped saint." She feels both resentment and relief to know someone out there knows that this is not a love story. They're taken to the crossing. Alina's never seen anything like it before. She walks into the crossing, overtaken by grief for Mal, as this is where she saw him die, and for herself. And when the Darkling finds her, he leads her to a church, one with a cemetery, one with Mal's grave. She meets the priest who upkeeps the graveyard, and she learns one very important thing for him, that the people know that she is unwell, that there is a rumor of her dying and being reborn, and that he is a part of her sacred army. The Darkling has tried to remove them, but he has not succeeded, and they wait again for the day that she calls upon them.
Slay?
She's got, like, a little rebellion.
Cool.
So Alina sits at Mal's grave until the priest comes back to collect her. They enter the car, and as they drive, everything hits Alina all at once. Mal's death, her marriage, the Darkling's rule over everything, her involvement in it all. She demands that the car stops, and she runs out into the nearby woods just to, like, catch her breath. And as she begins to calm down, the Darkling finds her a bit of remorse as he forgets how raw and how new it must be for her. Then he snaps his head up, his hands quickly following, and Alina should have known then to be afraid. But with everything that has transpired, she assumes that he's pulling another trick on her, a way to lure her back. And she does not move when he tells her to. But then she looks behind her, just as something seizes her in great claws and pulls her into the sky. They dig into her back, cutting up her clothing. She tries to get a good look at the creature without squirming too much, as a fall from this height would be fatal. But what she does see is a sleek underbelly armored in iridescent scales, black, then illuminated green, gold in a flash of lightning. Impossible, she says to herself. Improbable, she remembers. No one has ever seen a sun summoner before you came along either. But that does not mean that dragons are real too.
What the fuck is going on here?
So this is dragon now.
Okay.
And she yells at this dragon to put her down and is thoroughly shocked when it speaks back to her in a female voice.
Okay. Slay.
Then a black blur shoots straight up for the dragon's face. Then another goes for its left wing and she lets out a furious roar, the claws loosening, and then Alina's free falling. She barely has time to realize what's happening before something catches her. Two shadow claws hold onto either arm by creatures that remind her of her friends in the cellar. The Nichinoya. Alina remembers reading about them, the Nothings, they call them. The Darkling's creations. They carry her back down to where the car is. She's immediately sucked into a full-scale defense. The Nichinoya are on the dragon. The, oh my god, there's so many words. The Oprichnik? I'm so sorry, has a net cannon prepared and ready to fire when they get the call and the Darkling gives it. There's triumph in his eyes until he sees Alina bloody and torn up, and then the pride vanishes, replaced by something like real concern. She asks, "This is what we're here for?" And the Darkling explains that the beast has been menacing this farm for weeks, and that they had come to the Darkling and Alina specifically asking for help. But Alina confirms that this is not a thoughtless beast, that she can speak. The Darkling does not care, though, especially now that it has hurt his wife. He puts up his own shadows to blind the dragon and make the task easier for them. But in a panic, Alina throws up her arms and cancels out the shadow. The net is shot, but the light is just enough to help the dragon escape. The Darkling, clearly furious, turns to Alina but stops when he sees her. The other guards and Grisha, they sink to their knees facing Alina, head bowed as the clouds had parted, but only for her. And the Darkling shows all of his emotions, anger, annoyance, resentment, and Alina knows too well why. They fear him, they obey him, but they love her,
right.
A power that he does not have. When they leave, Alina is still furious at the Darkling, but being tucked at his side helps. His touch grounds her. He brushes her hair with his fingers, along with a sense of calm and certainty. Alina realizes with shock that his desires were still there, that part of him actually wants her like husbands were supposed to want their wives, and that this was not all about power. Mm-hmm. I'm very angry at you, she says to him. That would make two of us. What were you thinking running off on your own? I don't know. What were you thinking using me as bait? You weren't supposed to be injured. You were supposed to be safe under the cover of the trees. We were supposed to run back to the cars together. He presses a kiss to her forehead. It's so soft that she thinks that she imagines it. If you were always planning to use me as bait, then you should have told me. You keep talking about our marriage like it means something, but you clearly don't trust me. If I'm going to be your partner, you have to give me a little more. Now you're interested in a partnership. I thought you were angry at me. I am angry with you. But I think we can get further by working together than trying to sabotage each other. He had cast his humanity aside, but she refuses to give hers up. Fear of him kept Ravka safe, and she kept Ravka safe from him. We must all endure, you more than anyone. If I had known your plans then, maybe I wouldn't have assumed your intentions are always evil. Your first mistake is thinking in black and white. But that's what we are, aren't we? Shadows and sun, dark and light. The tension breaks. He relaxes against Alina and laughs again, a soft, dark sound. One of his hands comes up to caress her cheeks. Her heart gives a giddy lurch in her chest when he ducks his face close to hers. Her eyes flick to his mouth. You're seducing me again. And I'm still angry with you. That's not very kind. Haven't you already learned that I'm not a kind man? She opens her mouth to reply or to receive a kiss. She would never know, though, as the car jerks hard, as they turn onto a poorly paved drive, knocking them apart and begin to slow. They are stopping for the night in the tiny town of Polvost. So they separate when they arrive, Alina kind of embarrassed by her actions. After seeing Mal's grave, of all things, how could she have almost kissed the Darkling? Sure, she had been wet and cold and lonely and in shock and had almost died, but that was all it was.
Oh, yeah. Not like having emotions is important or whatever.
It's very, I'll say, Alina's a very compelling character. She kind of reminds me of, like, a Katniss. But in which, like, both of her love interests, you're like, yeah, I can see both of them, you know? Which makes it even more difficult. But in this sense, with Mal being literally dead, it's like, what am I to do, you know? So as she comes back from eating, she hears voices. Soldiers and Grisha sit together with the Darkling, and she overhears them speaking of the dragon, stating that the priest from the church is harboring the beast. Whatever Alina was expecting the Darkling to say never comes, as she hears, I have no desire to cause an insurrection. Not right now. I am trying to protect Alina. If what you saw today renewed your loyalty to her, you should want to keep blood from being shed in her name. Which is very different from... Honestly, I don't know how many months, like, the passage of time in this fic, but, like, from the beginning of this fic where she has to basically beg him, like, please do not retaliate the Shuhan in my name.
Right.
To him now being like, if you are as loyal as you say you are to her, you should not want blood being shed in her name. So there's already, like, a slight change there, you know? Which is, I think, A, one of the reasons why he's very compelling for me. As a character. Okay. And then also why, like, it's hard for her. Because I think on one end, she is like, he can change. Because he does all these little things. But he's still a 500-year-old man who is stuck in his ways.
Correct.
And sees himself doing the right thing. Which is the most compelling part for any villain. Is that they see themselves doing the right thing. So, it is very hard to change in that aspect. So the Darkling does not come upstairs for hours. He stops in the doorway like he's forgotten that they might be sharing a room, or maybe surprised that she hadn't fled into the night. Not that she could. It was going to be awkward no matter what. But they're in the dark, in bed together. Alina's heart won't stop with the Darkling's bare back to hers. She feels the mattress sink as he settles himself onto the other side of the bed. He does not move towards her, though, as she thought, hoped, feared he might. They must have when they were married, but he hasn't touched her or has made any forward move that she hasn't initiated first, and tonight is no different. And when they return home the next afternoon, Alina requests books on dragons. Over the next few days, it's nothing but reading about dragons and planning a party for their centennial, the 100th anniversary of their rule.
Okay.
She's so mad that the Darkling left this work for her. She wants to be training or working on real matters that aren't a stupid party, no matter how important the Darkling says it is. If you want to be more involved in the running of the Empire, I have to be able to depend on you, he tells her one night. What have you done to earn my trust? It's not like you've done anything to earn mine. And he supposes she's right, so he leads her into a room he's kept from her, and it's a gallery. There are rows and rows of paintings on the walls. Canvases sit in stacks in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
They're all of her friends. Some she remembers and some she doesn't. There's Jenya, Nadine, Marie, Zoya, and Mal. There's so much of Mal. And the Darkling has kept every one of them. He could have destroyed them easily.
Mm-hmm.
And he might have once, but in his words, he wants every part of Alina. Even the one she hides.
Mm-hmm.
And as she flips through the books, she notices that the Darkling slips in between the friendly faces, sometimes seductive, sometimes terrifying, sometimes oddly vulnerable, and she hugs the book closer to her chest.
Mm-hmm.
Can't we just, Alina says, tears at the corner of her eyes, haven't you ever thought about just having this? No. Never. Why not? I never had the luxury. No Grisha did until the founding of the Second Army. None of us dared to dream of a better life until me.
What an odd thing to be like, I'm the one that thinks of a better life. Not like, I don't know. I think that's a very human thing to be like,
sure.
I want more for myself.
No, yeah, I think.
Or more for the collective.
Right. I think you're right on that end.
But like, I understand what he means is like, no one was doing anything and I did something about it, but it's still just a very like, wow, how uppity of yourself.
I think what's, and I will agree, the most uppity part I think about this is like, hey, I bet you 500 years later, someone will take your position.
Right.
You are not the only person.
There's always going to be a person like you around.
Like, you don't have to do this. Like, Alina's right. She's like, haven't you just thought of, like, not doing this?
Right.
Like, giving this up and living a simple life.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, he's like, no one can do this but me. Nuh-uh. Which is like, I bet you easily someone will take your position.
100%.
Especially now, it's like, what are you going to do now that you're basically immortal? Are you just going to do this forever? Like, even George Washington gave it up at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't do this forever.
Right.
But Alina, she understood then more than she ever understands before. She immediately starts going to work, making relationships and starting initiatives to make sure that the children of Ravka are educated. And despite the Darkling not having any plans for education, he is not opposed to her literacy initiatives. And Alina catches herself smiling more. Not because she wants to, but because it just happens. Do you know why I had so many apple trees planted? Alina asks when they're in the garden one day. You never confided that particular secret. I'm given to believe it's something to do with Mal, since they can also be found at his grave. I understand your grief. I lost someone too. I'm sure you've lost many someones. You so love reminding me how much older you are and how much more experience you have. How I know so little.
Real. Get his ass.
She's so good. I can't lie. Like, she's really good.
Get his ass.
That isn't what I meant, and you won't like my answer. Because she's gone, and yet somehow standing next to me. And in all my years of experience, Alina, in my very long life, I have never experienced a loss quite like this. It takes Alina a second to realize that he's talking about her. What was she like? You're Alina. She never shed that melancholy. I hope she would. But we would spend time together, and we enjoyed each other's company. We fought side by side almost as fiercely as we fought with each other. Whenever she found the energy to fight me. When she was more merciful than I was, even when she was distant from the world. She never forgot what it was like to be, a word I can't pronounce, normal. We clashed over that most, over the fate of those people, but to me she was, you sound very married. His mouth curls up at the corner. I suppose I am. I wanted you always, but even when I had you, part of you was lost to me. As it turns out, I like you now. I like you whole. And Alina doesn't know what to say. She remembers the first night the Darkling kissed her. It was on a winter night, and the lake at the little palace had frozen over. He had only ever kissed her at night, under the cloaking darkness he wielded so well. But it was the afternoon. The sun lit every facet of him, all of his secrets. It threw into sharp relief the flicker of his eyes towards her lips, the way he leaned towards her. This terrible monster, this selfish creature, belonged to his own ambition, but whether he liked it or not, he was also Alina's. She wanted so badly to have something that was hers, and so she made this their first kiss under the sun. Which I think that part of it, where he's talking about her grief, and her grief is like, it's practically a character of its own, especially with it going back to past Alina, Alina before, where it was like her having witnessed Mal's death. Right. Really changed something about her. Mm-hmm. Like, it really, like, there was
I mean, yeah. If I were to see someone very, very close to me pass in front of my very eyes, I'm not gonna be okay for a long time.
Right. And for her, it was like, I believe it was in that conversation where he was like, I would hope that, like, a millennia would be good enough, but it wasn't. Like, even after 100 years, she was still grieving Mal's death. So after, Alina fills her life with comfortable lies, that their kiss had just been a product of loneliness, a necessary physical release, that she wasn't complicit, that she could negate whatever the darkness did by building schools and villages and hospitals and feeding people and clothing people, by revising the taxation system. And he brings out so many feelings in her, and none of them are easy. He makes her angry. He makes her heart skip a beat. He makes her squirm under his touch. But she's been spending more time with him, consequently in his room, in his arms. And when she spends her nights with the Darkling, Mal does not show up in her dreams, frowning and shaking his head in disapproval. In fact, he does not show up at all.
Interesting.
So every time he kisses her, her guilt drowns a little bit more and more, replaced by the rising surety of his touch. Not that she wanted literally anyone else to know. Not a goddamn soul. But because of these interactions, the Darkling has been more trusting of her. Or at least seems like it. He invites her to council meetings when she's not planning the centennial. He makes sure the others at the table listen to her, and he takes her on a date to the ballet.
Oh, wow.
And when the ballet ends, Alina grabs her coat from the usher. But when she puts it on, she puts her hand in the pockets to find a small card. And when she's alone, she reads it. And it reads, Madame Lola, soothsayer and fortune teller. And on the back, Saturday, two bells, come alone, don't be late.
Suspicious.
Now she does have to do a little manipulating, a little sweet talk to have him let her go alone. With a little this, little that. He agrees to let her go with Natalia. So not alone, but with her tailor. They walk around the town together for some time until Alina leads them to a stall with the words Madame Lola above the doorway. The woman is very enthusiastic, greeting them with excitement while leading them into her shop. She's absolutely sure that the stars told her of Natalia's arrival, and she needs to talk with her right this minute. So Madame Lola drags her to the back, and Alina is stunned. She turns to the receptionist. What's going on? What's going on is that you were supposed to come alone. It's not like I had much of a choice. Well, she'll be fine. Lola will handle her. You should sit down. We need to talk. And the woman removes her scarf around her head, and Alina gasps. It's Zoya Nazelvetsky. There's absolutely no way, but Zoya's unmistakable. It's definitely her. Alina had read that Zoya had sided with her at the Rafkin Civil War, but she still couldn't imagine it. Alina has so many questions for her. Why seek her out? Why isn't Zoya with the Darkling? Why hasn't she aged at all? Zoya explains that the war had killed some of her family members, so she had chosen to take Alina's side. When Alina split the fold, Zoya was taken somewhere else. She spent time there learning about the Grisha power, hoping to use that to take down the Darkling. But when she stumbled out of there, 90 years had passed. The Darkling had ruled everything, and she had nothing. And now she needs to recruit Alina back to her own cause. The words, let's take him down, are stuck in her throat. But she remembers how the Darkling had whispered her name in her ear just this morning. She remembers how she had just begun to feel like she belongs. And she's not the woman that Zoya knew. She is trying to help, but not by staging a coup. But Zoya believes that that's better. That this Alina has more fight in her than the broken queen. She's hesitant, but the only way she knows how to make this decision is by asking one last question. What happened to Mal? In the battle on the Fold, the Darkling said that I... He said that I was responsible for his death, that I killed him.
Mm-hmm.
No, Alina, you did not kill Mal. He took his own life to save you.
Whoa.
He made the decision Alina could never, and in the end, all he asked was for her to keep her humanity. Then, in her ear, less than a memory than an echo, is the Darkling's voice. You can end their suffering, Alina. Drop the knife. Stop fighting me. It's all right. We'll end it here. Drop the knife. End it, Alina. Say you're mine.
Icky gross.
I need to... What do you feel Sorry. About the Darkling in
I,
this moment?
I don't like him.
You don't like him?
No.
I think that's fair.
Because it's like... Listen.
Yeah.
This is like... I mean, granted, I know the tags of the fake, so like... I kind of get, but it's just like it all feels wrong.
Sure.
Their entire relationship feels wrong.
It's definitely manipulation.
Manipulation for sure. But it's just like he's nasty.
Yeah. No, I'll give you
and this is also a personal thing. It stemmed from what I can remember from being like a student teacher sort of situation or like a mentor student kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't like that. That makes me feel
right.
weird. I know some people are, like, fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I definitely, it's 100% manipulation, especially just on the field of, like, he used her grief to, like, get her to marry him and, like, end the Civil War.
Right.
But, like, not really end war, because there's still a Cold War.
Right.
So, really, that even didn't do a whole ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yeah, like, I get it. He's a villain. I understand 100%.
He just makes me feel icky gross. So
okay.
It's like,
Mm-hmm.
She's fucking shaking her head. Can't believe this.
So, that's all the answer that Alina needs to give Zoya an answer and to give her all the help she needs. And the first thing she needs of Alina is to free the prisoner in the cellar. His name is Nikolai Lanstov, the rightful king of Ravka. Okay. And they need to restore him to his throne. The only way to do this is to convince the Darkling into changing him back, since he was the one who cursed him in the first place.
Wow.
To say that that is easy for her to do is not quite so. She's betraying her husband for rebel forces with unknown consequences, and he still has this grasp over her.
Mm-hmm.
The decision isn't any easier when he looks at her, when he whispers her name, when he kisses her, when she's warm in bed wrapped in his arms. One morning, when she's in his arms once again, she asks him, "Why do you do that? Why do you always look at me like that? Can I not look at my wife? Your wife. I'm sure you've married before. Maybe I have, but this time is different. This time I knew I wouldn't have to watch my partner grow old and rot. When I made my vows to you, I knew they would be eternal." Alina wonders if the Alina before had felt the same way about him as she does. She started to see the shape of the person she must have been. Maybe she loved him, or part of her did. Maybe she doesn't. The Darkling has clung to her all the same. What kind of man would have been satisfied making love to a ghost of a woman for years? Yet Alina understands, because she has been lonely for such a small sliver of time while his lonely years stretched behind him. Because sleeping next to him is better than sleeping alone. And in a way, Alina is pathetic too. That somehow made Alina know him better, and she wasn't sure what to do with that. It was easier to think of him as monstrous. That's why I had a really tough time, especially reading the fic, completely hating him. I understand 100% the manipulation and the using of her grief and her loneliness against her, but it's also like, I don't know, there was just something about it that was just like kind of what Alina was talking about, where it's like he's been lonely for so long.
I don't know, the R in Darkling stands for Riz. I understand.
And it's just like, man, he's just a man, and what he thinks he's doing is correct, and like maybe I could help him. Maybe I could fix him. Like, there's just that piece of that, like, bad boy energy of, like, if he loves me so much, maybe he could change, you know?
Right.
But it is a very hard of just, like, he's not going to. And, like, that's a hard decision Alina learns over and over and over and over and over again. But it's, like, he explains it, and I'm not quite sure, like, how that happens. But, like, he explains that they're connected, like, by a tether. Like, by a magical tether or something. Like, they are connected by, like, fate or something. And it's just, like, okay, you've got me. I don't know. But anyways, with this understanding, she asks him of the monster in the cellar. And he says, Nikolai Lanstov, Ravka's last prince. He has a sharp tongue and a fox's instinct for self-preservation. If his sanity is intact, which it is not guaranteed, he tried to poison you against me with lies. He already tried to lure you away from me once with a proposal of marriage. We were engaged. You did not accept. Please, Kurspik, help me remember things. Very little, but there are fragments coming back to me even now. Talking to someone who knew me during that missing time, who knows what it'll bring up. I knew you. Is that not enough? And they both know it's not. So the Darkling reluctantly agrees to meet her in the cellar, along with some guards. Nikolai obviously isn't happy to see the Darkling. He thrashes about, but the Darkling is still able to put his hand over Nikolai's mouth. And he stills as his body transforms back into a man. The Darkling removes his hands. Nikolai falls back, and the Darkling leaves the cellar without even a look at Alina. When Nikolai wakes up, Alina is there at his side. He doesn't remember everything, but it's enough for Alina, who is missing the last hundred years of memories. They chat for a moment before Natalia fetches Alina for a Grisha council meeting. And as she is leaving, Nikolai catches her by the sleeve. You do not have to listen to him. He'll make everyone's life difficult if I don't. Nikolai, listen to me. Please, please behave yourself. I'll be back to see you soon. Then Nikolai sees Alina running her thumb over the simple gold band. Alina, what did you do? What I had to do, so Jenya and David and the others could live. You cannot judge me for that. Zoya has picked the possible worst time for this mission. The Centennial might give her the cover she needs to remove him from the palace, but it's also draining away all the time Alina has with him. And on top of that, the Darkling's increasing demands on her time. It was to keep Alina away from Nikolai. Mm. The Darkling is rather a jealous man, which is not shocking to anyone.
I'm not surprised at all.
And what time she does get with Nikolai is good. And truly, it's good for him, too, because he hopes that he can make a better impression on her this time. As the last time they met was some months ago when the Darkling had her dragged in chains. So the night before the Centennial, Alina bids the Darkling goodnight, regret creeping its way into her heart as she lets his hand go, and disappears into the cellar. She meets Zoya, and they cut the door off the cell, and as Zoya and Nikolai begin to flee, they tell Alina to come with them. But she cannot. She knows this. There is nothing that the Darkling won't do to get her back. Plus, she believes that she can do more inside. With the cloak of Alina's invisibility, they follow Zoya's escape route, and the jailbreak goes a tad too smoothly. But before they can even start to think of a different plan, the Darkling steps out into the clearing. The Oprichniki are right behind them, and Alina has sudden horrible memories of the night with the stag. The soldiers take down Nikolai and Zoya easily, but no one touches Alina. It's the Darkling himself who tells her to kneel, and Alina does. He then goes to Zoya and Nikolai, two of his biggest troubles, in one place, thanks to Alina. He says, Alina, some time ago you decided it would be easier to work with me than against me, did you not? I realized the same thing. Let you play rebel, hand you the prince, allow small victories. And now I can behead this futile rebellion before it even begins. It's the same game. The same exact game he played a century ago when he'd let Alina and Mal track down the stag for him. Don't do this, Alina, please. They're more valuable as prisoners, are they not? I hoped to be wrong about you, you know? I hope that you wouldn't take the bait she offered. That you wouldn't be so stupid. The Darkling holds up his hand, the signal for their execution at the ready, until a distant roll of thunder in a cloudless sky, the smell of the storm in the air, a crack of lightning. Chaos erupts. Everyone is disoriented, blinded by the flash, deafened by thunder that follows. The ground smokes. Once Alina can see, she spots it. The dragon. She goes for the Darkling, but he disappears into the forest. The firelight illuminates her black scales. The same scales Zoya wears on her wrist. How can Alina miss such a detail? There's a second crack, but it's not thunder. It's unlike anything Alina has ever heard. Thank you.
Sound design. Whoa.
And the darkness blankets the clearing. Mm. Alina has been caught in this darkness before, but this feels different. Alina thought that the fold was the Darkling's will made manifested, but whatever he was calling forth with Gerda Parnum was far worse. She holds up her hands, trying to conjure enough light to beat the darkness back, but it just swallows whatever she gives it. She feels a hand close around her right wrist, and a jolt passes through her. She puts her hands back up to fight, and tries to hold the feel of that grip as she summons light, and little by little it forces the darkness back. This power, she knows where it's coming from. She remembers that Zoya had said something about amplifiers. The creature takes something from you, just as you take something from it.
Whoa, sound words. Amplifier.
Amplifier.
Sorry.
You become one, stronger together. Mal and Alina had given themselves to each other willingly. And Mal may have died by his own hand, but Alina died that day too. The day that she lost him. She wonders if it would be enough, that exchange. So Alina crosses her arms in front of her chest and pushes the light out, willing it back into a protective sphere to hold the darkness back. And from somewhere outside, she hears the Darkling, her beautiful, terrible husband. What a brave little martyr you are, Alina. He raises his hands, and she knew what he was about to do even before he does it. He was aiming to cut at the dragon. So she does the only thing she can think of, which is bring her own hands up, making a cut that would cross his. So they bring their hands down in unison. There's another crack, and something knocks Alina off her feet before everything goes dark. And then Alina is back on that ship, away from the Darkling, sailing across True Sea to Neuvi Zem. And Mal, he's there. And the first thing she thinks is, am I dead? But not yet, he tells her. This is how you remember me. And he asks, do you love him? I don't think I'll ever love someone like I loved you. I don't think I'll ever have something that easy again. And before you say it wasn't always easy, I know that. I pined for you for years, but it felt like breathing. It felt natural. Loving him feels like drowning. Something tells me you'll be able to keep your head above water. Part of me's always loved part of him, even through everything, but loving him means never giving in. It means resisting, not enabling. Keeping him from doing his worst. Bagra learned that the hard way. I guess I know now, too. You make him feel human, you know. He resents that. He stays up at night just watching you, wondering how you got under his skin. I could tell him that's just the way you are, but he doesn't deserve to know that. Let him stew. He kisses Lena's forehead, ready to wake up. No. Sorry. People need you. But what about what I need? You have everything you need. Your will, your integrity, your snark, your brand of charm. Someone you care about, even if he isn't worth it. And your friends, who are coming for the throne. Make sure it's ready for them. And look up. Alina looks up and sees boughs rich with white blossoms in a lush green garden. Apple trees. Wow. When Alina wakes up, the sun is beginning to rise. Gray light streaming in through the trees. The Darkling lays a few feet away on his stomach. She crawls over to him and grabs his shoulder, turning him on his back. Already there's a wrongness to him, shimmering in the air around him. The param is wearing off, and she could let him die. It's probably a kinder death than he deserves. His own power would eat through him until it consumed him completely. And still, Alina finds the antidote, a vial full of green liquid, and makes her choice that this was not be the way that he dies. I would just let him fucking die there.
Whoa. How are you feeling in this moment?
I have a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm. Care to explain?
I don't know if I want to.
Fair enough. Just figured I'd ask since you so kindly asked me earlier.
I don't know. There's a lot of complicated, and I'm a sucker for a lot of things. Broken men being one of them, which is why I'm still alone.
Whoa! Holy shit, girl. Let's not talk about our personal lives right now.
So it's like, looking at the two of them, and I did my own research after this, where it's like, the story is not how it ends, obviously. This is fan fiction.
Right.
And it's like, Mal is just as good, and I like Mal as a character.
Mm-hmm.
But like, something about the Darkling, and like...
See, I'm always gonna go for the Golden Retriever.
I know you are. And I do too, for the most part. I like Peeta Mellark.
I don't know, the Golden Retriever is just like...
I know. But there's something about the Black Cat in this instance, where it's like, right. I think the most part of it is that like, he gets mad at Alina, but he never, like, physically hurts her. It's the bare fucking minimum. I know. But, like, he never physically hurts her. He doesn't, like she was talking about where he never pressured her into anything. He let her come to him.
Right.
So it's, like, very...
But that is the bare fucking minimum.
It is the bare fucking minimum. And
where, Mal, even though he's, like, a dream.
I know. Thing,
is, like... People are here for you.
I know.
And, like, he's soothing. And, sorry, this is also me being, like, I hate the Darkling.
No, so. I get it. And, like, I could have a different reaction if I ever read the books. And I might have different feelings once I watch the actual television show.
Right.
But, obviously, this is a Darklina fic in which they spend the most time together.
Correct.
And it's, like, man, that's really compelling.
I'm also just worried that... Again, Netflix is gonna, like, change a little, like, tweak things here and there to be, like, drama. I'm just worried.
That's plus, all. Like...
And I think it's a fair concern.
I think it's a fair concern, but I also want to say, like, Lee Bardugo is actively working on the show.
Which brings me hope.
Yes.
But...
Right.
Sometimes producers are weird about that kind of shit. You never know.
Yeah.
And, like... It's a whole thing.
But I think maybe my feelings would change, but, like, not having a ton of context for the show or the books.
Right.
Reading this fan fiction, it was like, that was really... Chell, I'm right behind you, you know? I'm right behind you. And, like, knowing...
Also,
yeah.
I was going to say this at the end, but I want to clarify. I know I keep making, like, snide remarks or snarky remarks. This is not in reference to Chell's writing in the slightest.
Okay.
This is just me... choosing violence for the night. I want to make that very clear, and I think that's known across, like,
I think
the fanfics that we read. When I make snide remark, I'm not trying to be malicious.
And as far as I know about the Shadow and Bone fandom, complicated relationships with the Darkling,
that's for everyone. It's across the board.
It's across the board. Like, and I know, like, following Chell,
I'm not here to, like,
no, absolutely not.
Chell is amazing.
Yeah,
we love lovely
Chell. We love Chell.
Fantastic writer from what I'm hearing.
One of the best author interviews we've had. But I think Chell, knowing her and, like, following her on social media, she is, like, a villain connoisseur.
Right.
Like, that is who she is. But even still, she has written this fic good enough that it's not just like, oh, it's just Alina giving in because you're a villain lover.
Right.
No, it's still, like, actively her character, or what I know of her character, with the Darkling still being, like, this, like...
Yeah, that's what I'm still getting. It's just, like, I have a distaste
towards
him.
No, I know
him,
you do.
And that's why I felt the need to say that.
Right.
Because I've been a little more violent than I have been in the past.
I also don't think I've ever come to you with, like, here's a villain...
Correct.
Like, for the most part, the ships that I go for are, like, ships that everyone loves.
Right.
But, like, Darklina is not, like, the canon ship of Shadow and Bone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has, as far as I understand, very complicated relationships around the Darkling.
Right.
It's, like, it's not, like, a set in stone, this is how we feel about this character or the ship kind of thing. So...
No, I know.
But it makes sense that we have...
I wanted to... Because I love Chell.
Yes.
And I was like, this is not about you, girl. This is about him.
This is about... It's never about any woman. It's always about the man.
Real.
But anyways, I'm so close to the finish line. So for a long moment, nothing happens. Then Alina feels this wrongness begin to recede. Her eyes open, and they're the same color as morning twilight. Alina reaches for him, and he for her, and together they get to their feet, and they walk back to the Grand Palace, leaning on each other. And when they are both healed and cleaned, they meet in the Darkling's small room. So what are you going to do? Alina asks. Have them wipe me again? The Darkling sets his elbows on the table, his eyes closed, and he says, ah, did you think that I would never find out? What gave it away? And do you remember what I said about Nikolai and his strange comment about meeting her when the Darkling had her dragged in chains? So there was no assassination attempt. The Shuhan had nothing to do with her memory loss. You don't get a do-over, but you erased a century of baggage. I knew enough of what you were, so you showed me the other parts of you that I'd like. Is that why you think I did it? No. Zoya compromised you. She sought you out. She told you where to find the monster. You were discovered in the cellar trying to free him. You acted alone. I doubt she knew what she'd awoken in you, but it couldn't continue. We had built so much together. I was only going to take 2 weeks from you, maybe 2 months. And anger flares in Alina. You can't have her back, so what will you do? Will you wipe me completely out and have a docile, complacent wife? I don't think you'd like that very much. No, I don't think I would. But could you accept me, Alina? Would you love me? Or does your love of monsters only extend to those who are tame and eat from your palm? Or could you love me? The Darkling doesn't think so. He stands against what she believes. He thinks she believes he causes needless suffering because she hasn't learned that suffering is necessary for growth. And yet, he gently takes her chin. You have loved me, and you will love me again. You must think of love as a punishment then, to inflict it on me as retribution because you so hate that you fell first. And the Darkling stills. What do you think you know of love? Love is punishment. All we ever love, we lose. You're stuck with me as I am stuck with you. I don't think that's going to be a problem. We'll see, the Darkling says. A threat, a promise, and a concession all in one. Then he notes the time. It's time for the parade and the public awaits. Alina stands. We would yield love like a weapon, as we wielded everything else. Maybe she would use hers as a pry bar to wrest him off the throne, but even if she can't, he knows her now. He knows whose side she's on. He knows what she would fight for, what kind of policy she'd make, what she would do if a rebellion reached the palace gates, and for now, it's enough. She slips her arm through his, and together they go to celebrate a century of their reign. And that is the end of Out of Time by Destinies. I know, it ends just like that. So when Chell finished this in 2020, she made a note that at the end that she started brainstorming about picking up a story 3 years after the end of this one.
Okay.
But that she did not break any promises. It has been 3 years. So we'll see. I'm saying, Chill, if you're listening to this as a dear friend, I would love a sequel. Because,
whoa.
It's really fucking weird the way you end that. What happened? Does she give him up? Do they figure it out? I need to know.
Whoa.
And I don't think the show's going to give me that because I went to go look everything up after this because I was like, so I need to know what the show is like now because I've gotten invested because of this fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nowhere near this. Of course, it's fucking not. What was I expecting? But I was like, so how canon divergence?
Well, sometimes you're like, sometimes with canon divergence, that's literally, it's like, oh, sometimes they take pieces of it, but then they change other things. So it's like, how many times do we intersect with the main story? But in this case, it sounds like it was like a complete
Y. It's a complete Y. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. That's why I was like, canon divergence. How much canon divergence? Like, in what instance of canon divergence?
Right.
It's a Y. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's like a squigglies and then like you cross.
It connects and it comes back.
And then it comes back and then you join for a little bit and then you separate again. And it's a whole thing.
But I love this fic. I need more of it. I was like, hey, Shell, I know it's been 3 years.
I mean, not to mention that you also said that there were raunchy sex scenes.
They're not raunchy. Mm. She writes them kind of like how I would write a sex scene, which is very not graphic, not very visual, but very like, I don't want to say classy because that sounds fucked up to people who write
but
smut.
Like, I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah. But I will say that she has a series called Timeless with four other works along with this one, She has light readings, life sentence, bedroom hymns, and starless ones, and they're all short one-shots in the before times with the before Alina.
Oh.
So in the 99 years in between, like them getting married and the beginning of this fic. They're all, some of them are smutty, some of them are angsty, so I would check the tags, please, before just clicking on next work.
Mm-hmm.
Because one has, like, a tag that's like, if you don't fucking read that tag before you just start reading, you probably will hurt yourself. But three of them are smutty. I did not read them quite yet, because I was finishing this up. So I don't know how smutty they are, if she keeps to the...
I mean, I'm assuming...
Right.
She would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like a lot of her stuff is more emotionally weighted.
Yeah.
So instead of focusing on the physical aspect of it, we're more on the psychological. Yeah.
And this is very emotionally, like, it is emotionally heavy.
Right.
Like I said, grief is almost like its own character. She takes this past Alina with her. You learned so much about her and, like, mm-hmm. who she was. Like, her just being, like, she was basically, like... You know, like, learning her be like, oh, well, you helped with the airship plan. So she's like, I would never do that. But it's, like, when you learn about her of just, like, she was practically a shell of a person who would just do anything because she knows what Mal did for her to get to this moment. And she was like, if I have to create a war plan or an airship plan, then I will do it. So you learn about this past character. And it's, like, it's a completely different character than the Alina who is now, because that Alina... She, like, she saw Mal, like, yesterday, you know? She didn't watch him die. Like, she has, like, visions of it, but she doesn't remember watching him die. Therefore, like, that grief is not there. Like, that heartbreak is not there. But, yeah, even the Darkling, I was like, man, I don't think I've seen a villain character, let alone, like, a secondary male love interest character, like, written so well. In the sense of, like, I understand why you're doing everything. Even though it's bare minimum, like, you are... I don't know, like, you're a warmonger.
Right.
Like, fuck, man. Like, I understand why Alina has really complicated relationships, because she's like, yeah, part of me will always love him, but to her, she can't just be like, well, he's my husband, and we live happily ever after, because she's like, he won't give it up. There's no compromise on his end, in the same way there's no compromise on my end. I'm not just gonna be your docile, doting wife. Like, I'm gonna make sure you don't unnecessarily start war, which you like to unnecessarily start war sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Good for the whole family.
Yeah. Wholesome family fun.
Wholesome family fun. And I would love to know what ideas Chell was brainstorming for those 3 years afterwards, because it's like, man, if it's anything like this one, it would be really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Slay.
It was so, like, it's much longer than I wanted to, because I literally couldn't cut things out. It felt to me like Passerine, where it's, like, objectively, like, 100,000 words is not a whole ton. Like, when you look at this, you're like, oh, 25 chapters, there's, like, 200,000 words, 175,000 words or whatever. But there's, like, no, it's just a clean 100,000 words.
Mm.
But there's so much packed into each chapter.
Right.
That it's, like, fuck.
God damn it.
God damn it. How dare you write me a compelling and incredible story?
What the fuck,
the
man?
The fuck, man, with good character writing and...
Don't fucking do that shit.
Good emotional intellect. Fuck you. But...
Me and the homies hate to see it.
Me and the homies hate seeing well-written fanfiction. But it had me more excited to watch the show, because I'm just like, man, I want to see the Darkling again.
Whoa.
I understand everything you're coming to me with, where you're like, I didn't like his manipulation.
Right. No, this. I know. But, yeah. but it is like,
right.
People are always attracted to the villain.
Sure.
For various reasons. Uh-huh. I have never found myself to necessarily be one of those girlies. I know in the Patreon episode, I was like, oh, I did like the villain. But it was more like a visual thing.
It was a mask kink.
Yes. There was something very distinct about all of the villains that I liked as a kid, where they were big-tittied and had a mask. Whereas, like, there were reasons behind why I liked the other characters that I liked in those shows. Yeah. Whereas, like, the villains was just like, wow, they're pretty.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, like, I would say that I'm... also not an individual who normally likes the villains. Like, we've talked to, I like Hawk, she's a pretty good, he's a pretty boy, golden retriever. Mm-hmm. He does some bad things, but I like broken men. What can I say?
Right.
but, like, even someone, like, I don't know, like, I just don't, I don't tend to go for villains, you know? Mm-hmm. Just, like, overall. But something about, like, the way that, like, Leigh Bardugo has written The Darkling, something about the way that Chell specifically wrote The Darkling was just, like, man, I don't know. Like, I think I'd forgive him for his war crimes and just be his little wife. And, like,
whoa.
I would do what like, I would not just give in. Like, I feel like I would be Alina, but I feel like I would be her, where it'd be, like, difficult to just give him up. Mm. In the way that I think some people would just be like, sucker.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, relationships are complicated.
Yes.
And that's not just saying, like, oh, a partnership, but right. Friendships are complicated.
Yes.
Acquaintances mm-hmm. can be complicated. Situationships yeah. are complicated. Yeah. Like,
all human relationships
life
are complicated.
Is complicated. Yeah. And when it comes to something like that, especially,
right.
there's a lot of other factors at play that make it even more complicated.
Yeah.
So
I really just, I don't know, like, I just really was fond of the Darkling in that way, where it was just, like, getting to know him more. And I think specifically, like, I found myself more attracted to the Darkling than Mal in the first season, because I don't remember Mal being that much of a character. Hmm. I think he becomes more of a character because obviously they ran off together.
Right.
Rather than in the beginning of the season, they were separated because she mm-hmm. became a sun summoner. And so then she spent more time with the Darkling. So I was mm-hmm. like, I'm just seeing a lot of the Darkling. Mm-hmm. And he's being played by Ben Barnes. So what can I say? You know? Look at that face.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll change, and maybe, like, I'll soften a little bit more to Mal. Not that I say I wouldn't. Like, it's just, I understand the people who like Mal, because after what I read about him, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Like, I get it. But there was just something where it was just like, yeah, what of this alternate timeline of, like, she doesn't run away with Mal? Like, that never happens. Mm-hmm. And she's stuck with the Darkling. And so what can she do? Like, right. does she take the path of, like, working with people to throw a coup over the Darkling and usurp him? Or does she work with him because she's also immortal, so she will live forever with him and, like, hope that over time, because what is 100 years to an immortal human,
right?
Like, to wear him down to the point where it's like getting him to step away from the throne, or even getting him, like, does it have to end in death kind of situation?
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, it's really interesting thought process to have
mm-hmm.
for something in that universe.
Yeah.
So kudos, Chell, thank you so much.
Yippee.
Friend to us all.
Slay.
And watch Shadow and Bone when it comes out March 16th, second season. I'm intrigued to see if it'll become a Hunger Games situation in which, like, it is wholly revered by generations, or if it becomes like a Divergent where it's like it gets worse as it goes along. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
the second season will be very telling.
Well, you know what? We cross our fingers and we hope, put it into the universe, Shadow and Bone season 2 will be good. Thank you. Good night. Thank you for listening to another episode of Canonically Incorrect. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and Tumblr. You can send us your fanfiction recommendations, or if you're a fanfiction author that would like to be on our show, email us at canonicallyincorrectpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us, you can donate a one-time donation at ko-fi.com/canonicallyincorrect. You can subscribe to our Patreon monthly at patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect. Thank you to our Patreons, Autumnal River and Riley C, for your continued support.
Donate to AO3!
And we'll see you guys next time!
Bye! Bye.